All right. Our guest today, an up-and-coming rock and roll artist. She reminds me a lot of Debbie Harry from Blondie, just because of kind of the guttural, in-your-face approach to her performance. She's got just an earthy, guttural singing voice that just has so much punch to it. And I'm sure when you hear her music, you're going to love it too. So let's bring Val Kinsler. Elsie, do we have Val on the phone? All right, let's introduce Val Kinsler, a true rock and roll rising star. Val, welcome.
Hello.
To Monkey Radio.
Thank you.
It's so great to have you here. We're excited to talk to you. And let's start right off the bat. The way I met you is you participated in a songwriting development workshop. I had previously been a part of it as a songwriter myself. And
really?
Oh, yeah. So I met you, Val, and that was I was so impressed. And I don't mean to sound like I'm gushing, but I'm just giving context. I was so impressed by the music you created with producer Phil Carroll on this particular tune. But I was also impressed by your presence, both in the music and in person. And I'd like to tell you now that although this may not be what you're shooting for some reason you reminded me a little bit of Debbie Harry from Blondie.
Wow. No, that's a compliment. Thank you very much. I love
just that,
Blondie.
That kind of sensual gravitas. And I just really felt like you had that thing. You had that factor. You had that it thing, that star quality that I was like, I got to talk to this chick. I got to dig deeper. And then when I looked
you.
At...
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, when I looked at you out... your stuff that's out public, I was like, boy, she's got it going on. She's building something here. She's really trying to build something. And you remind me a little bit, you should check out friends of our show. There's a band out of Boston called Girl on Top with lead singer Karen DiBiase. You have to check them out. Go to girlontop.com. As a matter of fact, our intro music for every episode on Monkey Radio is one of their songs called Live For It. It's a great song. And you should check them out. They're great music, and I think you'd appreciate that. So anyway.
Excellent.
You remind me of her a little bit, too, in terms of that gritty gravitas. So.
Cool.
With that introduction, we have Val on the show, thankfully. Now, Val, let's start here. Who are you? And by that I mean... do you consider yourself more of a musician? Are you an artist? Are you a poet? Are you, or is there another identity to you and music is an add-on to your life? Who is Val Kinsler?
I think I would consider myself a rock and roll poet.
I love it.
I use music. And as I do some mixed media artwork as well, music, theater, poetry, visual art, always to express some sort of heartfelt phrase that's going to resonate with people. I'm always searching for that unifying thread that reminds people of a significant moment in their lives. That's what drives me to write. And inspiring people to change, I guess, and be more aware and connect on that basis. I don't know if that's being articulated as it seems wishy-washy or...
No, I get that. It makes me think of Laurie Anderson, except in rock and roll.
Yeah, you know, it's as though, like, when someone is making a really big decision in their lives and they feel like they're the only one out there in the wilderness and all the pressure is on them to make that decision, and a song can come in at that moment that completely assists someone in having a change of heart or finalizing a decision that will completely transition them over to the other side from where they thought they should be or get them out of that, you know, seesaw thing of should I or shouldn't I, and that's what I hope to do with art, with music. You know, lyrics are extremely important to me, and when I see movies and the exchange between people in movies, I'm always getting ideas for songs because I learn my lessons through other people. And when I'm watching them, I'm relating to something that occurred in my own life or something I need to change or do. And that's what inspires me to write. It's, you know, a major inspiration to communicate with the heart of hearing overall with people, you know, whether it's an issue of humanity or politics or love and relationships or just a spirited let's get up and dance type of thing. So when I was inspired to write Rock and Roll Women because I was going through a lot of transition in my life. It was actually pretty recently. I'm still going through a lot of transition, but I'm kind of over the hurdle. And actually, composing the lyrics to that song assisted me in getting over to the other side of that hurdle. It gave me strength because it connected me with other women who had been judged by their circumstances rather than celebrated for how they handled themselves under these specific circumstances in these certain straining situations, and how society tends to judge people from the outside in rather than from the inside out. It's just the way it is, but particularly where I think a lot of strong women are concerned, there's sort of a stigma. We get stigmatized at times rather than dignified, and I would like to, you know, use this song to promote and dignify women rather than stigmatize them for all the kind of oops-a-daisy drive you crazies along the way and all the seemingly socially inappropriate things that we might do under pressure.
Would you say that music, writing music for you and expressing through songs like Rock and Roll Women, which was the first of your songs that I heard, even though it's the most recent, is this more about expressing yourself or connecting with others?
Well, if I'm brave enough to express how I feel, I find that it resonates with other people, not just women, but I've had people come up to me and be, you know, I have another song that's actually called Heart of Hearing, and our new drummer that we're working with, he's like crazy for that song. Now, he interpreted it in a completely different way than what I intended when I wrote it, but that was all good. It's important to use the music to reach other people. It's therapeutic for me to write from wherever I am, but my goal really is to connect with others and use it as a form of communication. I mean, if I hear something on the radio or I'm in a store and I hear music playing that's just like a sequencer running loops over and over again and a repetitive sort of shallow lyric, I understand that there's a point to that as well, but that's not who I am as an artist. I want to provoke people's thoughts and inspire them to change if that's what they want to do, or to at least look at the idea of change, because I think that's, you know, change is inevitable in life and that's what keeps us all together.
Let's provoke some change and inspiration here. It'd be good if we gave our listeners just a little taste of the song we're talking about. Here's a bit of Rock and Roll Women by Val Kinsler, a very cool tune. Take a listen.
Rock and Roll Women need forgiveness. Scam.
Let's backtrack a little bit, Val. We talked a little bit about who you are as an artist, maybe a little bit about who you are as a person, and a little bit about what your process is in terms of trying to emote and connect as a musician, as a poet. And I love that term, rock and roll poet. Is that what you said?
Yes.
That sounds like a good album name. Rock and roll poet.
Yeah,
I
well,
love it.
You know, piano was my first instrument. I love the piano, and I tend to overwrite. I have a lot of instrumentals on the piano, but I have to be careful when I choose that as a songwriting tool because it's my first instrument, and I can overlook and overwrite, overwrite and overlook the original intent of a song sometimes by prettying it up with technique. But the guitar, I've been forced to keep it much more simple. And with Rock and Roll Women, it was very cut and dry, a very simple part, because it's not my first instrument. I'm a songwriting guitar player. And that allowed me to channel the message more clearly. But I was always interested in writing. When I was a little girl taking lessons, I wanted to play the Burt Bacharach songbook and the Beatles and all of those wonderful 70s songwriter songs. And then, of course, I got introduced to Janis Joplin while I was in a rowboat in the middle of a lake in New Jersey. The day she died, I heard her music coming out from a little pub that was in New Jersey, and my brother said, "That's Janis Joplin, and she died today from a drug overdose." And that was my introduction to, but that voice, how it impacted me. And then Grace Slick, of course. But there's been a lot of influences that gave me the courage. A lot of people singing out, men and women, John Fogerty, Creedence, Humble Pie, and Frank Zappa. They gave me the courage to be more expressive with my writing and take risks. And I always admire artists who take risks. But for me, mostly, I would call myself a rock and roll poet because it does start with the words. When I had no one to talk to because of a bullying incident years ago, and I was, too afraid to tell my parents, and I had brothers. I was the only girl with four boys, so it was kind of like, odd chick out type of thing. Like, women are kitchen cleaning and housework. You don't do certain things because you're a girl, blah, blah, blah. If I wanted to be a whole person, it was called running away from home, essentially. So I had to brave the storm in many ways. So I took to writing because that was my safety net. That was kind of like my tent in the middle of the woods with the little flashlight. That's the safest place where I could really fully express myself.
What would you say is the connection that you have with other musicians and with producers that you work with? What is that process like for you?
With Philip Carroll of Rad, it's been really automatic, instantaneous, wonderful. I heard about the Rad competition through a friend of mine who was booking me through the years, who was going to attend it himself. He's also a musician. His name is Mike McHugh. He wound up in the hospital with a heart attack. And it was the same night that we were to attend this Rad competition together. So I went to visit Mike in the hospital and check up on him. And he said, you just go, you do it. And when I hit the Rad thing, I did my song Genius. I'm not a fraud of anything. Give me room to spread my wings. Graduated from handcuffs, born on the cusp of genius. And Philip, he really, somehow related to that song, and we clicked immediately, and we were discussing the fact that it's difficult for artists in New York City because the rents are very high for the venue owners and such. For artists to put the money in themselves to do the promoting is very expensive, and yet the clubs aren't willing to pay artists most of the time. It's very hard unless you draw a huge amount of people and they sell out the bar, essentially, which is, it's a challenge for the venue owners. It's a challenge for the artists. You've got to suddenly be a promoter, not only an artist, and pay for all your expenses and rehearsing. And Philip and I also, for us, the music is a spiritual outlook. So he loved the fact that I was a rocker. But I'm not just a rocker. I also have a lot of classical in my background, and I have a lot of jazz in my background. And I he has classical because he had a degree from, I think, Manhattan School of Music. So it was a perfect fit. He allowed me to be as creative as I need to be and explore the parameters of my talent while reinforcing that with his string arrangements and his suggestions about, you know, the overall complexion of the production. He's very open-minded. He didn't categorize any song by genre initially at all, and that's not how we worked. We worked for, you know, the benefit of the song itself, maintaining the intent of the lyric and making a concise delivery so that it wasn't, you know, too long, too overwhelming for other people to listen to and grasp. But it's been a very positive experience, actually. He's become a very dear, dear friend. And I'm the type of artist who sort of, you know, I feed off of, like, the energy that's around me. And if I'm around negating people who are just like, oh, you know, we're the cool ones, you have to do it our way.
Yeah.
This is the type of music we're into. We're only into hard punk. We're only into death metal, or we're only into dance R&B. I don't relate well to that. I can relate to any type of music as long as I can feel the soul in it. And Phil is the same.
Let's touch on that, Val. In reviewing your catalog of music, at least what I've seen on, like, Reverb Nation and so forth, I mean, there's definitely a style, but there seems to be a very wide spectrum of the type of music that you've presented. There doesn't seem to be just one avenue that you go down. Like, you listen to Aerosmith, and they always sound like Aerosmith. I don't know that Val Kinsler always sounds like Val Kinsler to me. I don't believe that you're trying to find your sound. I think my perception is that you've been discovering your sound. Let me rephrase that. Your sound has been growing over time.
Yeah, it's evolved. You see, a lot of those tracks that are on Reverb Nation are almost a misrepresentation at this point. It really needs to be updated. I've been produced by several different people. Years ago, I was in the studio with Ted Horowitz, also known as Papa Chubby, who did a wonderful collection, the True Love Lies collection, with some slide guitar on it for me. And we actually co-produced that stuff together, and it's very rootsy and bluesy-oriented, because that's what I was doing at the time, a lot of blues, a lot of gutsy stuff, which I just love roots and blues music. Phillip's stuff that's been produced in the Rad catalog is a little bit more new agey, you know, I would say, more with the strings and such, and almost with a kind of a pop thing, like Show You Care and Sullivan Street Serenade, Dream a Little Louder, and Rock and Roll Woman. These are rad productions. It's a different standpoint. And then the Larry Russell songs, Broken Ballerina, I mean, he didn't write Broken Ballerina. I wrote it, but he produced it. He wanted to leave it very raw and rough-edged, because at that time, you know, it's almost like a conceptual, it is really a conceptual CD, which is attributed to this dancer who perished by the hand of the Tompkins Square Park butcher, and it was very kind of harsh, and he wanted to leave it that way on purpose. It's something that really needs to be scripted for people to get the point, you know, of it all. It's almost scary otherwise without the text to comprehend where those words came from and the sound of my voice. So there's a variety of directions on that ReverbNation.com site, because I did work with several different producers. Right now, currently, I'm working with Joseph Vasta, who played with Joan Jett, Billy Idol, Mink DeVille, and John Waite. He's a brilliant arranger, and he's producing me, and he's playing bass in my band. And David White from the Hollies and Danny's Devil Blues, he's our lead guitar player. We've got Tony Lazzara on drums. We're developing a whole other sound. It's almost like Queen. You know, it's very, it's still got the classical influence, but we're leaving space and moments in between so that, you know, the arrangements can really be brought home in a more concise way. It's going to be very different from everything that's on Reverb Nation, yet the same songs, we're redoing a lot of those same exact songs, but it's going to be with a lot more clarity and poise, I would say. But, you know, so, this is the thing with art. You have to get it out from where you are.
Okay,
and then
so
you evolve from that point.
This is an interesting thing. Now, a painter, every piece that they paint probably still ends up being out there if it's ever been public. You don't pull your paintings and only show your later work. It's a body of evolving work.
Right, that would be erasing a part of yourself. I mean, if you listen to like really earlier records of Neil Young, they're sparse and simple. You go from After the Gold Rush to like Harvest, which is, right? It's completely different.
But here's my question. As you're trying to redefine yourself and reach that point of, my guess, I'm assuming something here. I'm assuming that you're not just an artist of craft. It isn't just about doing the music, man. It's also about being discovered and being able to reach as many people as possible and hopefully have it also be a commercially lucrative thing for you, both as a lifestyle and also giving you limitless opportunity to create more of your craft. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. That is the goal. That's what we're working on.
So here's my question then. As the public at large is not, I don't believe, vastly aware of you as a musician yet. There's pockets of people that know of you, but the mass of people are not completely, you're not a household.